Back in the 70s, when Adelaide was the radical hope of Australia, Mag Merrilees joined the rush of, and this is her list, lesbian feminists, radical lesbians, separatists, socialist feminists, anarchist feminist lesbians, to that, her words again, dry, flat provincial city, to work out new ways to live and new politics to fight for. Mag is still there, still fighting for a better future, and she's written her memoirs, Scared, Angry, Laughing, or How to Fix the World. It's many things, a slim, shrewd, funny, unique history of a battling woman's life. And Mag joins me now from Adelaide. Welcome to Late Night Live.
Thank you, David.
Buried in the book, I think, is one of the most important declarations you make, and I would like you to explain it. I am essentially a good girl.
Well, you know, I was brought up by ex-communist parents, so they weren't even in the party by the time I can remember. But they didn't go back to being normal either, of course. But my mother particularly was, she was pretty keen on manners. She'd grown up with a lot of manners. So she made sure we dotted our I's and crossed our T's and said please and thank you and so on.
And presented a respectable face to the world.
A respectable, that's right. If you're going to have radical views, you could at least present as respectable.
And did this mean that you were not going to, say, lob hand grenades, you were not going to put tree trunks across the train tracks? There would be limits to your political activity.
I don't think she minded if we didn't have limits, as long as we, you know, we'd... My father was a case in point. He was, I've never met a more courteous man. You know, one of my early memories was the police coming to the door during the Vietnam moratorium times because he'd put his name to an ad in the paper or something. And he was completely courteous with the police. I never saw him be anything other than courteous.
But Mag, that's true of the memoir that you've written, is that courtesy, even to the police, even when they are arresting you, is part of it. I mean, you know, rage, but courtesy. You know.
Well, hey, David, I'm white, I'm middle class, I'm 70-something, I'm, you know, the police are going to be cautious around me anyway. I'm sure I'd feel differently if I was young and black and... or Palestinian or whatever.
I don't know that they would necessarily have been all that kind to you if you'd been, say, in Sydney a couple of weeks ago demonstrating against...
Well, that's true.
Yes. But now, look, tell me about your first arrest. Why were you arrested?
1983, there was a big women's gathering at Pine Gap, hundreds of women, to protest about the, let's call it the spy station. It's just played its part, as we know, in the current mess. So it was a demand to close Pine Gap. So we pushed the gates down, basically, and then gathered inside and thought, oh, now what will we do? So we walked up the road to have a look at the spy station of the police. There were Commonwealth police there as well as Northern Territory police, but they were a bit outnumbered. Anyway, they herded us, rounded us up eventually and put us in the men's cells in the Alice Springs Watch House, which was a really chillingly horrible experience spending the night there, in that it was a reminder of what Aboriginal people in Alice Springs were experiencing every night. Some people in the street told us the next day that that was the first time there hadn't been any Aboriginal men in those cells in Alice Springs.
Because they were full of women.
So that was a learning experience for sure.
And when you discovered that the employees at Pine Gap had hurriedly fixed a fresh gate, what was the response to that?
We wrote on it, of course, "Congrats, boys, on a hasty erection."
Ridicule matters in politics, doesn't it?
It does. It does. Well, I think it matters everywhere, doesn't it? We'd go mad if we couldn't laugh.
Mag, what was it like to go to Adelaide in the 1970s. What was the city like?
It was small. So it was I'd been living in Melbourne, and Adelaide was a much more manageable place. It was, you know, if you remember the Central Market, you ran into people you knew in the Central Market. And, of course, the main thing was it was the legacy of Don Dunstan. You know, the impact that he'd had, the homosexual law reform, but more than that, the impact that he'd had on in all sorts of ways. I mean, you know, the Pink Shorts Press, who published this book,
as named after the famous
pair of pink shorts. And you know, the story I've heard, I don't know whether this is confirmed or not, was that when Dunstan, he snuck out of Parliament House and posed for the media in the pink shorts, he had escaped from his handlers or his minders or whatever they were in order to do that. He may not have had the full support of his parliamentary colleagues, but that in itself, I think,
The pink shorts. But I wonder whether there was a sense that this was a small town, that it was a manageable town where you knew people.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
Therefore, the kind of informal political activity that was your life could be effective.
Yes. There were debates, of course, within that, because it was, you know, one of the first places to have a women's advisor to the Premier, for instance. And there were lots of things like that going on. But it was interesting coming from Melbourne. Some of us thought that it would be compromising our politics to go along with government-funded services and so on, that we wouldn't be able to be quite so loud-mouthed and...
I can hear that argument, Mag.
I can hear
that argument, yes. We must be entirely separate. We must be pure.
Yes, exactly. We must... And if we're not throwing stones, we're failing. And I think in a city this size, you can see that development from that oppositionalism, if I can call it that, to a strong sense of community. I mean, I think the Constellations Festival that happened just a few weeks ago is a case in point. Like, for a community of this size to be able to pull together a few days, more than a few days, quite a number of events just like that was... And local writers, it was a great opportunity for local writers, bookshops, publishers, all sorts of people, writers got involved and managed to pull this thing off.
A writers' festival to replace Writers' Week that had collapsed. On ABC Radio National, this is Late Night Live, I'm David Marr, and I'm talking to Mag Merrilees about this beautiful memoir she has written of her political and other life. Are you enlisted for frontline duties? Do people ring you up and say, now that we've got this demo going, Mag, we need you in the front line?
No, I'm not as heroic as that. But we've got a good thing going here, actually, which is called Community Defenders. It's a group of people who will surround, especially something like that, where people of colour or people who are vulnerable are trying to have some sort of protest, then make a buffer zone around it of people with some training, non-violence training, not to take over the role of the police, but just to be a sort of a protective layer, trusting that the police will then deal with any violence that threatens from the outside. And this group of people will make sure that things are okay on the inside. So that's interesting. I did go to Newcastle 1 year.
What was that all about?
This is called Rising Tide, and they're a very canny group of people, young people, all sorts of people. Newcastle, they say, is the biggest, I think, coal port in the world in terms of the amount of coal that gets shipped out of there every day. And so this has been an annual protest to try and just shut the harbour down for a day or more to, once again, it's about getting people to think, making people aware that this is happening. Like, this is, you know, we're pretending that we're doing something about the climate crisis, but we're still shipping out more coal than anyone else in the world. So that protest, you know, very clear that this has to be about changing new job opportunities for the people who will lose their jobs when the coal industry is finally shut down. So it's not a short-sighted protest.
But, Mag, looking back on your life, do you think demos work? Do you think demos have impact, can produce change?
I don't know the answer to that, David. I wish I did. I don't block streets anymore. It just irritates people. They want to get to work, and I don't think stopping them from getting to work is the most effective way of changing their minds about anything. I think actually one of the important ways they work is for the people who are doing the demonstrating, because I think it's important to get out there and see that you're not on your own and that there are other people, and that if we do it together, we can do it. So there's that. But I've for some time now, I've tended to do more localised things, or not road blocking anyway.
Tell us about the Santos demo.
Yes, well, that's a case in point. Well, that was a group of us south of the city, all women, thinking what to do. And honestly, we had signs that said we tried polite, and of course we have tried polite. All of us have tried everything and had no impact in terms of Santos sponsorship. And Santos and the South Australian government are particularly cosy in bed together. So I'd made banners. My last lot of banners, the letters were 2 metres high. That's spelled out.
Great.
Only one earth. Anyway, still didn't seem to be working. So we decided we would do this thing at the Tour Down Under, at the women's race. We'd let the women riders go past, but then we had flaps that dropped down. That's a row of 10 of us. And when we dropped our front flaps and showed our breasts, they read Santos sucks, one letter each. And then we turned round and dropped a flap off our bums, and that read dump Santos. The funny follow-up to that is that this year at the Tour Down Under, a couple of the veterans of that event hung them up on a string between two trees, so that the riders and all the support vehicles and so on, the media and everyone could see them as they went past. The people who recognised them immediately were the police.
They had longer memories.
They did, and I think they'd probably enjoyed it, actually.
Were you arrested? Were you charged with...
Yes, we were charged. Three of us were charged with indecent behaviour. So we appeared in court numbers of times with signs that said, actually, we're decent people. And the police prosecutor and our lawyer exchanged, speaking of courtesy, extremely courteous letters backwards and forwards, and finally the police withdrew the charges. Mysteriously to me. I mean, you know, it wasn't indecent. You could see something more indecent than that any day on the beach.
Oh, honestly, Mag, you don't back away from the power of your own demonstration by saying such things. Then no one's going to believe you.
Well, the thing is, you don't very often see 70-year-old bums and breasts on the beach. I guess that might be the indecent bit.
Are demos, are protests cleverer now than they were when you were young?
I don't know if the protests are cleverer, or I'm just a bit less naive than I was back then. But I think I'm so impressed by these young people who are stepping up they're sharp. They know what's going on. They can see what the future might hold. They know what needs to be done. They have courage. I think they're fantastic.
So what's the cause of choice at the moment, and how are you addressing it?
I think I, you know, writing this book, I think I'd have to say at the moment, my intent with the book is serious. The tone isn't serious, but, you know, any way we can get people to think. It's such a precarious moment, and I don't know about you, but it's a weird position to be in, to be looking towards the end of your own life because of your age, and also contemplating the possibility of the end of civilization as we know it. Maybe in some ways that makes it easier to look at the end of civilization because your own life is winding up anyway, or going to at some stage.
Oh, yes, because we can leave it to the young. You know,
yeah.
They're the ones that are going to have to deal with it. But I wonder whether you are now, and you and your friends, are sort of invulnerable now. You're old. You're not going to be roughed up by the cops.
No, that's right.
You're invulnerable.
Well, as long as we don't come to Sydney, as you say. Yes, I think that's right. I mean, I think, you know, I've got a pension and so far nobody has threatened to take it away from me if I don't behave. I live in a house that my partner owns. I'm white-haired, I'm respectable, if I can't speak my mind and be in the front line at a demo, then who can, really?
Mag, look, thanks so much for joining us on Late Night Live.
That's a real pleasure. Thank you for having me, David.
I have been talking to Margaret Merrilees, writer, activist, and author of this beautiful book that's come out. It's 133 pages long, Mag. It's so short and tight and funny and vivid, and it's lovely, absolutely lovely. It's called Scared, Angry, Laughing, or How to Fix the World. Published by Pink Shorts Press, of course.